Good morning. It is a pleasure. It is a pleasure to be with you on this this wonderful Wednesday morning. This is our last of the seven core series that we started all the way back in Elul, and we'll have a chance towards the end to recap and to talk about what we've spoken about over the past 7 weeks. Somebody just mentioned to me that perhaps it's fitting that last week we spoke about the beginning of the rainy season, and certainly our brothers and sisters in the northeast of the United States appreciate the concept of Mashav Ruach Amarat HaGeshem, and the humbling experience that comes from confronting the awesome power of nature, of course, the awesome power of the Mashav Ruach Amarat HaGeshem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let me begin this morning by sharing with you a personal experience. Immediately before I began my tenure as a rabbi in Manhattan, I studied in Israel for 2 years in Yeshiva University's Kollel in Beit Vegan. And these 2 years were magnificent years. They were Gan Eden-like years. I was already married. Food and board were covered by YU. My wife was learning in seminary in Yerushalayim. I was learning in Gruss. All of, we had peers and friends who were in similar-like situations. You had a number of couples with the same ideology, the same outlook on life, doing the same things. No responsibilities. It was Gan Eden-like. You know, every phase has its yitronot v'chesronot. Every phase has its positives and negatives. Nothing is perfect. But this phase was certainly miuchad, was unique, and we knew when we were going through it that it wouldn't be recaptured. I mean, this was a very special time. And it was a time when it was almost like every day was kulo kadosh, meaning our activities were shaped towards spiritual ventures and Torah, and living just a life of Torah and mitzvot without any of any difficulties and other responsibilities. One of the difficulties that I had in moving back to America and really starting my work as a rabbi was the spiritual disconnect that I felt. In Israel, when I was learning full-time, I can tell you that I honestly felt Hashem's presence at many times during the day, throughout the day, throughout the week, and throughout the year. I felt Him. I saw Him. He was a real presence in my life. But once I was back in America and once I started working, even though it was in the rabbinate, I didn't feel the same connection. In fact, my first speech at the Jewish Center, which was clearly the worst speech I've ever given in my career, was about Hester Panim, the time in which Hashem conceals His face to the Jewish people. And I know that I spoke about this topic, even though I didn't speak about it for me, I spoke about it conceptually and poorly, but I spoke about it because that's how I was feeling. I felt that Hester Panim. But although it was more challenging to make that connection with Hashem, there were two specific places that I regularly experienced and still felt His presence. One was in the hospital, when I would visit those who were ill, and the other was in the Beit Avel, when I would come as part of the group to comfort the mourners. For some reason, when visiting those who were ill and comforting those who were bereaved, I felt that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was present, that he was watching over. You know, we say at a Beit Avel, when you leave, you tell the Avelim, Hamakom Yenachem Etchem. What does Hamakom Yenachem Etchem mean? Hashem should comfort you. And it's interesting that the name that we use for Hashem has many names, but the names used for Hashem is Hamakom. Hamakom. Why do we choose to call Hashem Hamakom specifically at a Beit Avel? And I heard once the name of Rav Soloveitchik that we use Hamakom specifically at a time, at a place, where you think that God is not present. You think that maybe, in a Beit Avel, in a house of mourning, you know, it's something where, or perhaps take Pesach, we say, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, before we get to the Arba Banim. So you think, Hashem, oh, he's with the Chacham. But the Rasha, the Tam, the Sheina de Elishol, no, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Hashem is with all of our children. Dafk in a place where you think God is not present, that's when we say that's his place too, and that's the Beit Avel. Dafk in a place where we think, you know, it's times of sadness, it's times of pain, it's times of darkness, it's not a time where Hashem is. No, Hamakom Yinachem Etchem. That's where God is present. It's in the time of sadness and the times of pain and times of darkness. That's when we feel Hashem. You know, we've entered a new time of the year. After Sukkot ends the sunny season of Israel, and we moved into the winter season. And now, of course, every year is going to be different, and it's a little warmer. It's more warm this year. But the breakup of the year is basically that. It's the sunny season into the winter season. And it's a season that's generally characterized by cold, by winds, by rain, and by darkness. And darkness, the days get shorter, the nights are longer, it is more dark. And I would suggest that as it is a time of darkness, specifically a season where Hashem is present. Now I want to explore this idea further with you by analyzing the holiday that most characterizes our Jewish experience of winter, which is what, of course? Chanukah. I have to leave you with a little bit for you to have in a couple months from now. Chanukah. Now the key to understanding Chanukah, and I would suggest the winter in the Jewish holiday life yearly cycle, is that Chanukah is parallel to another Jewish holiday. There's another Jewish holiday where Chanukah is clearly parallel to. What other holiday do we have that you would suggest that Chanukah is parallel to? To which Chanukah is parallel? Sukkot. Why is Chanukah parallel to Sukkot?
8 days.
First of all, 8 days. We don't have any other holiday that is 8 days. Pesach has 7 days. Shavuot is 1 day. Rosh Hashanah is really fundamentally 1 day. Yom Kippur is 1 day. The only other time we have 8 days is Sukkot. Okay, any other comparisons?
Mm-hmm. Outdoors, you put the lights outside.
Sorry? Chanukah is a time of Hoda'ah and Hallel. And Sukkot is also a time of Hoda'ah and Hallel. I'll go a little out of order because you picked that one. Look at source number 4. And you can appreciate this even more from the source in the Gemara. Da'amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishur Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzedek. Shmona Aser Yamim Sheyach Gomer Ben Et Hallel. Of the whole calendar, there are only 18 days from the Torah that one is supposed to complete the Hallel. Meaning we say Hallel, not just when we complete the Hallel. When else do we say Hallel? We say Rosh Chodesh, and we say what else? Chol HaMoed on Pesach. And there it's Chatzi Hallel. But once you get to Chatzi Hallel, it's actually a siman that it's not the complete Chiyuv. It's something else is going on. But when you get to the essential Chiyuv, that's the whole Hallel, there are only 18 days of the year. What are the 18 days? Shmoni Yemei HaChag, 8 days of Sukkot, Shmoni Yemei Chanukah, 8 days of Chanukah, Yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach, Yom Tov Rishon Shel Atzeret. You know, how come the Gemara doesn't mention Yom Atzmaut? Wow. Okay, that's a whole other shir. Now, so you have 18 days. Of the 18 days, 16 of them, 16 out of the 18 days is devoted to, it's Chanukah and Sukkot. And again, you have the 8 and the 8. So you have Chanukah and Sukkot, they're both 8, but more than both being 8, they're 8 days of Hallel. Let's look in the Gemara and see more comparisons. Look at source number 1. Gemara says, the Gemara in Shabbat, we actually just did this in Daf Yomi, Tana Rabbanan, Mitzvat Chanukah Ner Ish Ubeito. The mitzvah of Chanukah is Ner Ish Ubeito. What does that mean? The essential mitzvah is to light how many candles?
One
per house. per house. This is the essential mitzvah. Ner ish ubeito, one candle in the house. V'amahadrin, and if you want to go further than that, you get to ner lekol echad v'echad. You light one candle per person. V'amahadrin mina mahadrin, and if you want to be the most mahadrin mina mahadrin, v'shamei omrim yom rishon madlik shmona mikam be'elech pochet v'holech. V'shamei says you start with eight, and then as you go, continue in the holiday, you go in descending order, 7, 6, 5, etc. And Beit Hillel Rim Yom Rishon Malik Achat Mikam Elech Mosav Olach. The first day you light one, and the rest of the days you move forward and you continue to increase, lighting 2, 3, 4, and 5. Amar Ula Pligi Batrei Amarai B'Ma'arava Rabbi Yosi Bar Avraham Rabbi Yosi Bar Zvidi Chad Amar DeBeit Tamei DeBeit Shamei Keneged Yom Menechnasim VeTamei DeBeit Hillel Keneged Yom Menhayotzin. One explains this dispute between Beit Shamei Beit Hillel that each one just has a different count. Either we go according to how many days are left, or we go according to how many days that we have passed. Look at the other reasons. V'chad omar, taimer debeit shamai, keneged pari hachag, v'taimer debeit hillel, demala mekodesh v'ein maridin. We'll start with Beit Hillel. The reason for Beit Hillel is that we have a general principle of malin mekodesh. You go up in kedushah, you don't go down. So we want to start from one, and then we'll go up 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, which is of course what we do. But Beit Shammai says we go down. Why? Keneged Pari Achag. What does that mean, Keneged Pari Achag?
The Sukkot, for the Avim.
Okay, good. So, Chag, as we've said before, is a reference to Sukkot. What are the Pari Achag? So the Pari Achag, if you look at source number 2, we have a list of the, each day a Karban is brought on the holiday. Now, it's the same thing true in Pesach. Each day a Karban is brought on the holiday. But the difference is that on Pesach, the same exact korban is brought every single day. Now, it's very easy to see this. We don't generally think about korbanot. But in the Sidur, when we daven Musaf, it's very easy to note this. Because Pesach, you only have one paragraph that you say. And Sukkot, you got to figure out. It says, Yom Bet. Is that Yom Bet of Chol HaMoed? Is that Yom Bet of Israel? Is that Israel? Is it America? You're figuring the whole thing out. So you see that on Sukkot, something is different every single day. But on Pesach, it's always the same. So you could say the same. What is different on Sukkot? This is what's different. There's only one thing that's different. This was different on Sukkot. The Chamisha Asiyam L'Chodesh HaShvi, just look by the underline, to the 15th day of the 7th month, Parim B'nei Bakar Shlosha Asar. There are 13 cows, Parim, that are brought for the Musaf. B'yom HaSheni, look at the next underlines. B'yom HaSheni, how many? Shnei Masad is 12. B'yom HaShlishi, Parim Ashtei Asar is 11. B'yom Rabi, Parim Asara. B'yom Chamishi, Parim Tisha. B'yom HaShishi, Parim Shmona. B'yom HaShvi, Parim Shiva. The only difference, everything else is the same. The only difference is the number of cows. The number of cows goes in descending order, and it keeps on getting lower and lower and lower. For that reason, the Gemara says, that's why Beit Shammai says you start with 8, and then you go to 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now, does that make any sense to you? Why doesn't that make any sense to you? What's the connection? He could have picked anything. I mean, when I send my kid to school, I give him, a shekel for tzedakah the first day. And you could have picked any. Pick any count. My count's Sfira. That's even better. That's smarter. When I count Sfira, we count 1, then 2, then 3, then 4. We count up. Meaning, out of all the things in the Jewish calendar to choose, why is Beit Shammai choosing Sukkot as his model, as the Pari Achag? So clearly it's hinting to a greater connection between Sukkot and Chanukah. But the truth is it's even more in this Gemara. Now, the essential mitzvah of Chanukah is Ner Ishu Beito. You have to light one candle a house. Do you know anybody who lights one candle a house?
No.
Okay, we don't want to be just Pasha Jews. We want to do Mahadrin. The Mahadrin is that every person in the house lights one candle. Do you know any house where every person in the house lights one candle? We do the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin. This is like, it's like Badatz in the Gemara, has taken over. Every single person in the world every Jew in the world, when they light Hanukkah candles, they light Mahajim and Mahajim. And the very fact that the Gemara includes these levels, it's very rare. The Gemara to say, okay, here's the essential mitzvah, then you have Hidur. That actually happens. But then you have Mahajim and Mahajim. And we don't have time to go into it now, but in the actual nature of these laws, the Mahajim and Mahajim, these Mahajim and Mahajim become part of the essential mitzvah. Where else in Halakha do we have Hidur as such a primary part of the mitzvah? It's the Etrog. If you look at source number 3, V'kachtam lechem b'yom rishon pre-eitz Hadar. Hadar, Hidur, even the word, it's not Chumrah, it's Hidur. Hidur. The concept of Hidur, which is also part of the essential mitzvah of Etrog, to the point where there's a layer of Pesul, it becomes disqualified if it doesn't reach a certain level of Hidur. Similarly, you find by Chanukah. So far we've had the fact that the number of days are the same. You had Shammai as Pariachag. You have the pre-Eitz Hadar and the whole concept of Hidur. You have Hallel. And there's another connection that's astounding. It's astounding. What do you want to say? I'm sorry? What about the oil?
Start picking the olives and using the oil like after
Sukkot?
Okay.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, now they're doing
Now they're doing oil. Now they're doing olives. Okay, that's interesting.
But also the nest is outside.
That's interesting. Now they're doing olive oil. When did they find... Right now they're doing olive oil. That's interesting. I didn't know that. Maybe that's another great connection. There's two amazing connections. That's an interesting one. But let me show you another one. It's a historical one. If you look at source number 5, this is from Sefer Maccabees. Or Sefer Maccabim, the Book of Maccabees. And the Book of Maccabees, which perhaps we can gain some historical insight, look what they said happened on the actual day of Hanukkah. It's amazing. Look at the underlines. Now, upon the same day that the strangers profaned the temple, on the very same day it was cleansed again, even the 5 and 20th day of the same month, which is Kislev. So the 25th of Kislev is when they cleaned the temple. Okay, so that's Hanukkah. And they kept the 8 days with gladness, as in the Feast of the Tabernacles. Remembering that not long before they had held the Feast of the Tabernacles, when as they wandered in the mountains and dens like beasts. Therefore, they bear branches and farbos and palms also, and sang psalms unto him that had given them good success in cleansing his place. You know what they were holding on Hanukkah?
Lulavim.
On Hanukkah, they were holding lulavim. And aravot. So, and they were remembering that Sukkot. No, these are us. The strangers are the ones that profaned the temple. I mean, those are the Hellenists. These are the Hashmonaim. That when the first year when they celebrated Hanukkah, they remembered that first Sukkot that year they were in the mountains and the caves. And now Hanukkah became a celebration of it's explicit in the history that they not only recalled the Feast of Tabernacles, meaning Sukkot,
but they reenacted.
But they celebrated it later because they couldn't originally. There are several cases in history where...
All I'm showing is that I showed you before there was a halachic connection between Hanukkah and Sukkot, but here we see even a historical connection between Hanukkah and Sukkot. All of this begs the question of what exactly is happening. Why is there this connection between, this profound connection between Hanukkah and Sukkot? The parallels are unmistakable and really undeniable. So what's going on here? So I think that perhaps to understand this, we have to think a little bit about Sukkot. When is Sukkah in the calendar? Is Sukkot at the end of the year or the beginning of the year? What would you say? Okay, so it sounds like a good politician. He said one thing before you said the other. I think I've heard that in this campaign season. Okay, it is. On the one hand, it's the end of the year. What end? What end of what year? Oh, okay. Shalosh Regalim. It's the end of the Shalosh Regalim season. Okay? It's the end of, also the end of the harvest. The end of the agricultural year. Sukkot comes at the end of Shalosh Regalim. Shalosh Regalim starts by Pesach. Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. This ends also the agricultural season. It is at the end of the year, definitively. In fact, it says that in the Torah, that it's Tkufat HaShana, it's the end of the year. But yet, it's the end of the Tishrei holiday cycle, which in the sense is launches us to the beginning of the new year. It's the beginning of the next year. And what we spoke about last week, it also begins the rainy season. So is the beginning of the year? Is it the end of the year? Of course, the answer is like any good Jewish question. It is both. Yes, exactly. The answer is yes. The answer is yes. And therefore, what Sukkot really is a time of transition. It's a bridge. It's a bridge between two kinds of years. It's a beginning and it's an end. In a sense, it's in the middle. In fact, what month is Sukkot in? And the Torah, what month is the Torah? What does the Torah call this month? Chodesh HaShvi'i. It's the seventh month. It doesn't talk about the beginning. It doesn't talk about the end. It's the middle. It's the seventh month. And I would suggest it's a bridge. What is the nature of this bridge? So I think that if you look through the Torah, you'll see that there are really only two seasons in the Torah. As we spoke about a little bit about Israel, there are only two seasons, of course. That's what the Torah is talking about. That we have one season, which is the days of Shemesh. That's the agricultural season. And that lasts for 7 months. From Nisan to Tishrei. Maybe the middle of Nisan towards the end of Tishrei. Okay, that's one season in the Torah. And then you have another season, which is the days of rain, which is 5 months or around. It's in the middle from the end of Sukkot to the beginning of Nisan, the beginning of Aviv. The sunny days, are days of joy. There are days of light. There are days of produce. There are days of food. There are days of growth. Right? And we know this psychologically, when it turns to spring, suddenly people are happier again. Right? These are happy times. The spring times are times of sustenance and produce. The winter times, it's wind, it's rain, it's cold, nothing is growing, the world is dead, at least superficially. The world is cloaked in darkness. 7 months of the sunny season, we celebrate our gifts from Hashem. It's overt. Hashem is giving us these gifts. This is food that's growing from the ground, like manna from the heaven. It's food growing from the ground. The gifts of Hashem are manifest and apparent. And we celebrate that. And it culminates in Sukkot. And we spoke about how Sukkot, you're living under the Anane HaKavot. You have Hashem is there. It's the sun, it's the food, it's we thank Him, it's all wonderful. But towards the end of the days, at least when you get to the last day, I think it's tinged with sadness. You know, what is the, if I asked you, what is the saddest day of the Jewish year? So people, I think, would say Tisha B'Av. I could argue, though Tisha B'Av is a good one. But I might argue the last day of Sukkot. The day after Sukkot. Or really what Shmini Atzeret is trying to cloak. The whole Shmini Atzeret is a fascinating holiday. Or lack of holiday. Kasha Elai Preidatchem goes both ways. Meaning we say Kasha Elai Preidatchem from Hashem. But we're... it's also from Hashem, but we're also projecting from ourselves. And for me, one of the hardest tefillot, as we say, is an Hoshana Rabbah morning. On Hoshana Rabbah morning, we say the end of the Yihi Ratzon. We ask Hashem, "V'tasir michitzat habrazel hamafseket beinenu lebeinecha," to remove the iron curtain, the steel curtain that divides between us and you. Now, when did this Mechitzat HaBarzel fall. All throughout Tishrei, it wasn't there. It wasn't there in Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Dirshu Hashem, Bihi Matzo. It wasn't there on Sukkot when we're sitting under the Anane HaKavot. But yet when you get to Hoshana Rabbah, when you get to the end of Sukkot, you start to feel that there's a Mechitzat Barzel. Because we're leaving the holidays. And we're returning to, in a sense, normal life. We're leaving the days of the sun and moving into the days of darkness. And we beg Hashem, B'tasir Mechitzat HaBarzel, remove that curtain. And Shmini Atzeret, in that sense, is the perfect day of transition. Because on the one hand, it's of course a holiday. On the other, there are no mitzvot in this holiday. There's no special mitzvah on Shmini Atzeret, because we're moving into a period without special mitzvot. Without those holidays, a period of darkness. And this period of darkness, this winter, is a time, it's a time of fear. It's a time of fear. If you look at the last source on your page, is a really amazing Gemara. Talks about the winter. Source number 6. The Mishnah is in Avodah Zarah. Speaks about the pagan holidays. Why do we need to know the pagan holidays? Because there are certain prohibitions that the Jews are not allowed to engage in certain acts, either on or near the pagan holidays. So they have to tell us what are these pagan holidays. If you look at the Mishnah in source number 6, these are the pagan holidays. These are the Roman pagan holidays. Kalanda, the Saturnura, the Kartisim, the Yom Gnusei Shomachem. So of those, do you recognize any of them, by the way?
Saturnalia,
exactly. So Saturnalia, which is a phrase that people, a term that people know perhaps a little bit, that's a pagan holiday that actually has, I think, Purim-like connotations of changing, of doing not just crazy things, but sort of, gender, wearing other clothes, you know, all these different manifestations of it. It's really not important. But look how the Gemara describes what's going on here. What are these holidays? Amar Rav Chanan bar Abba, Kalanda chetimim achar tkufa, Saturnura chetimim lefnei tkufa. The Kalanda is 8 days after the tkufa. The tkufa is tkufat tevet, and Saturnura is 8 days before the tkufa. Tana Rabbanan. L'fishera Adam HaRishon Yom Shemitzma'et V'Holech. Adam HaRishon saw that the world, that the days were getting smaller. What does that mean, Adam HaRishon saw the days again? When was Adam HaRishon created?
Tishrei.
Or maybe that time.
The end of Elul.
Exactly. You know, whatever it is. That area. Okay? So he's created and he's created at that tkufa, let's say the beginning of the year. And he sees, all of a sudden, he notes
the days are getting shorter.
Amar, he says, Oili, Shema Bishvil Shesarachti, Alam Chashoch Ba'adi V'Chozer L'Tov V'Vo. Maybe it's because of my sin. It's because of my sin that the world is getting dark and returning to Tov V'Vo. We spoke about, what was the world before creation? It was darkness. You know, water, darkness. So Adam is saying, maybe that this is happening because of my sin. V'zohi mita sheniknasa alai min hashamayim. And this is the mita, this is the death that God is punishing me with. It's a fascinating aspect of the story which we didn't have a chance to speak about, which is, oh, we didn't do Perek Bet, that's why. But Hashem says, warns them that if you eat from this tree, then what's going to happen? You're going to die. But do Adam and Chava or Adam and Isha die? So they don't die right away. So this is an interesting Gemara. You have to explain that, what happened there, and there's a good explanation. We're not going to deal with that now. But this Gemara is touching on that theme, that maybe this is the Mita that God is decreed on me. Amad ve'yashav chet yamim b'tainitu b'tfilah. He sat 8 days in mourning and in fasting. I'm sorry, fasting. Thank you. Fasting and prayer. Kivan shera'at kufat tevet v'ra yom shmarich v'holech amar minhagosha lamhu. Once he saw, then kufat tevet turned, meaning you have the turn of the winter solstice, that the days started getting longer. So he says, he realized, he goes, okay, so this is really just the minhag of the olam. Halach v'asa shmoni yamim tovim. He made 8 days of celebration. L'shana acheret, the next year, asan la'elu la'elu yamim tovim. Hu kavam l'shem shemayim v'hen kavum l'shem avodat kochavim. The next year, each one made continued this holiday, but he did it for Shem Shemayim, for Hashem, and they did it, the pagans did it, l'shem avodah zarah. And that is the source of Saturnalia. I'm not an expert on pagan holidays. I understand that, from what I understand, and it's really extremely little, that this is the only time that this concept is suggested as the source for the holiday, which is really this fear of the winter and the joy when the winter comes to an end or begins to, it turns towards an end. And I think the fear is the fear that's expressed in Yadus, meaning it's our fear. It's our fear of the darkness. Now, what this says about Hanukkah, I'll leave for you to think about. It's fascinating because Hanukkah is during this time. 8 days during this time, winter, Tevet, so all this period. And Hanukkah, of course, is a rabbinic holiday that came much later. But yet, there seems to be something in human nature, perhaps, which wants to celebrate,
wants to have light,
and wants to celebrate when there becomes light. So winter is this time of fear, and the turn towards spring, the time when it gets sunnier, begins a time of celebration. Now, with this background, we can appreciate what the rabbis did. It's ingenious. It's really ingenious. And I heard this next point from Rabbi David Silber, who is the head of Drisha Institute. And he said to me, I think this is what he meant, we spoke for 2 minutes, but he alluded to this, that basically like this, the Daraita holidays, the Torah holidays, are all during the sunny season. Pesach begins, the Aviv, the spring, Pesach, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, they're all during the sunny season. And after that, the winter has no holidays. Has no Torah holidays. That's the time of darkness. So in the sunny season, where everything is overt and obvious, that's when we are celebrating. And the winter, the darkness, there are no Daraisa holidays. The bookends of the Daraisa holiday season, as we said, it starts with Pesach, and it ends with Sukkot. Now Pesach, if you had to, in one word, say, what is the theme of Pesach? What's that word? Okay, I would say they're all good words. Maybe there's not one word then. I would say Geula. Okay, Geula is the word, I think, for Pesach. And out of curiosity, I don't think we're all going to agree with this, but what is the word for Sukkot? Okay, Simcha is a good word. Any other words? I would argue that the word is Hashkacha, meaning it's Hashem's Hashkacha on the world, which is both manifests itself historically with Anani HaKavod in the desert, and also agriculturally, that's what we're bringing the Chag HaSif to Hashem. It's all Hashem's Hashkacha. And this is all overt and obvious. And it's overt and obvious not just in the history. You feel Geula when you emerge from the darkness and you have food. You feel like you want to thank Hashem, or you begin that season of food, let's say. And you feel Geula when you Chag HaSif, or you feel the Hashkacha when the food actually comes. That's the time of the sunny season. What the rabbis did is, they took these Daraisa holidays, these bookends, and they pulled them into the winter. Purim is Pesach. And it's Pesach in many ways. It's Pesach thematically is the time of Geula, and it's Pesach halachically, which I'm not going to have time to go into, but maybe in a shiur on Purim at another date. Sukkot they took, and they made Hanukkah. That's why there's so much overlap. Because they consciously did it that way. They made it in a way that it's hard to even to miss, although we miss it, but it's hard to even miss that it's 8 days, 8 days of Hallel, 8 days of Hidur. Shammai somehow comes up with Parei HaChag. Even historically, the Jews of the period thought that Hanukkah was like Sukkot. Because the theme of Sukkot is that we're under the Anane HaKavod Hashem's presence, and then the rabbis come and they teach us that even in the times of winter, even in the times of darkness, even the times where it's not so clear, that Hashem's presence is still here as well. Even in the darkness, there still is light. The Chanukat HaBayit that Shlomo HaMelech did on Sukkot is repeated in Bayit Sheni on Chanukah, the Chanukat HaBayit. And the image is a very important image, the image of the fire, the Ner. I just realized this actually, that the whole concept of the fire. Where else do we have this fire? So I think the first time, where's the first time you have this fire reflecting Hashkacha? What would you say? Say again, the Amudesh, before the Amudesh. In the Sneh. Asher einenu uchal. The bush that would not burn. Now, why is that significant that the bush doesn't burn? Why is it significant? So the bush, what is it? What's the whole point of the burning bush that doesn't consume? So one thing you could say is it's just unnatural. It's just unnatural, but you said something else, which is what? That it's eternal. Why is it eternal? But more than that, why can it not consume? Because a fire that consumes its fuel ends. The whole point of this fire is that it doesn't consume its fuel. And because it doesn't consume its fuel, it doesn't end. And that's what happened on Hanukkah. The fire did not consume its fuel. And it reflects the Ner, not the Ner Tamid in the Mikdash, although that too is a reflection, but it reflects that the Ner of Hashem is always Tamid. That even in the darkness, there still is light. Even in Bayit Sheni, that there wasn't filled with miracles all over the place. And it was a totally different tkufa. Still, Hashem's presence, even though they thought the Maccabees won the war, they thought Saba won the war, Hashem's presence is here, even when it's not so obvious. Even in the winter, even in the times of darkness, even in the hospitals, even in the Batei Avel, Hashem is with us. Even in the galut, even in the exile, this tkufa that we're still in, Hashem is with us. It's Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot that reflect the overt geula and hashkacha. But it's the winter months that actually reflect the time period we're in. It's Hanukkah and Purim that, in a sense, we can connect to even more. Perhaps until you reach Medinat Yisrael, we could talk about that in Yom HaTzmaut. But it's on Hanukkah and Purim that we could attach to even more, as in this tkufa of winter, where Hashem's glorious and comforting presence can still be felt. On this note, I want to close a little bit. Begin to close our year. You know, we learned, I would say it's a year, just a few months. But we learned, I think, much in this past few months. And even though it was only seven sessions, perhaps because it was broken up and lengthened out, and it spanned the beginning of the holiday season and the post-holiday season, it gave us an opportunity to think about this a little more. The first, just to have a quick review, first class was called The Fragility of Life and the Meaning of Time. And we spoke a lot about intentionality and living consciously and not sleepwalking through life. We moved to Inside the Mind of a Sinner, discussing the two paths to tshuva. One being cognitive behavioral, focusing on the acts that we do, figuring out how to avoid that act. And the other is more internal, focusing on the dispositions that led to the act. Like we spoke about Lashon Hara as a primary example, you could deal with the act, like what are the tricks we're going to use to make sure we don't do that, or we could work on the internal character traits which have led us to feel that not just that Lashon Hara is okay, but that allows us to enjoy it so much. It allows us to enjoy it. So work on the what is it about us that we are interested in speaking about it. So that was Inside the Mind of a Sinner. We moved to the healing effects of granting and asking for forgiveness. When we spoke about the different kinds of forgiveness, sometimes when we're stuck, unilateral forgiveness, one-way forgiveness is all that we can achieve when the other person can't respond in kind. But the most effective is forgiveness that comes from a healing conversation. A healing conversation which gives us a chance, I suggested on multiple, both conscious and subconscious levels, it gives us and the other person a chance to grow and to heal. We then moved to the wisdom of vulnerability, which dealt with Sukkot, and how although we pretend our lives are protected and permanent, our keva, they are in truth awry. They are vulnerable. And Sukkot, the whole concept of Sukkah, is really a metaphor for our lives. It teaches us that we need others. We need the people to whom we are close, and most importantly, we need Anani HaKavod, we need Hashem. The fifth class of creating the world or creating yourself suggested ways in which we could implement our plans and hopes for ourselves in the coming year. To slow life down, to put things into words, to be mavdil, our day, to have periods of time where we evaluate and assess, to take, for example, Shabbat, to recharge and recenter, and finally, if need be, to reboot. The sixth class last week was illusion of indispensability. So much of what we deem is important is actually not. Perhaps I didn't really relate to this as much last week as I should have, and that's an excellent point that was made. Perhaps one of the most important things is ourselves. We think of ourselves as indispensable, and we are not. And how should that affect us in our thinking? But more to the point that we were speaking about, which is the need to prioritize and define for ourselves what's critical in lives, what is less critical in our lives, and to structure our time and devote ourselves accordingly. And finally, in this last class, we dealt with the light at the end of the tunnel. That light is Hashem. That light is Hashem, and He is here during sunny times, and He's here during dark times. He is present not just at the end of the tunnel, but He's present even in the middle of the tunnel. That light shines all throughout the tunnel, and it should keep us warm and comforted and connected. This is a famous machlokes between Uncle Maishi and the Kutzke Rebbe. If you ask Uncle Maishi, where is God? He will say, Hashem is here, Hashem is there. Hashem is truly everywhere. But yet, when they asked the Kutzker, where is Hashem? He said, Hashem is where you let Him in. And the lesson I wanted to close with is that we should all work to let Him into our lives. To turn to Him, to talk to Him, to daven to Him. To let His comforting presence into our lives. The secret to a happy life, along with all the joys and celebrations, life will throw its share of trials and tribulations. It's true for everybody. Nobody escapes it. It's true in any country. It's true throughout the history of the world. Whether you're sitting in New York planning for an election and then all of a sudden a huge storm comes to throw everything in perspective. If Hashem is with you, then you're never alone. And then you will have the strength and ability to continue to thrive and to grow. To close this series, then, let me say that the goal of these talks was not just to intellectually explore the philosophy and psychology behind the halachot and the minhagim of this time period, but also give us an opportunity to think about these things so that we have a strong base and launching pad so we can aspire to great heights in the days and months ahead. As I said to you at the outset, often people only think of this during Elul. So I'm happy that we've already made it to Cheshvan, still on this topic. Hopefully our meetings have contributed, at least in some small measure, to each of you at least thinking about how we can have a more productive and meaningful year. I know that it has helped me. I appreciate and thank you for coming and for sharing your insights and for opening up with your personal stories and experiences. By your presence and your participation, each of you has truly elevated my own preparations for the coming year. And I want to close our segment by wishing each of you a Shana Tova Umetuka. It's not just a bracha in Elul. It's a bracha that applies now and applies throughout the year. May this year be a year of Avodat Hashem, of growth and productivity, a year in which we take all of the lessons we learned from this season, all of the resolutions, all the realizations, all of the values, all of the priorities, and apply them to the rest of the year. May Hashem bless our efforts, and may each of you experience a wonderful, blessed year ahead.